Welcome, welcome to episode 31 of the Black Hole Cinema podcast. Once again, I'm your host for this evening, Emma Platt, and joining me is Mr. Chris Haig.
Hello.
Hi. And Mr. Chris Byrne.
Hello.
And because Chris Haig's here tonight, so that just basically means that me and him aren't going to talk about any of the topics we're supposed to at all.
We have topics.
Apparently.
Yes.
I know that there were messages on Twitter, and so this week we have got our usual movie news, apparently. We were going to try and do some movie news, but we've all just gone, what are you talking about tonight? What are you talking about tonight? So,
yeah.
See how that goes.
Oh, there'll be news.
Then we're going to talk about Knock Knock, which is Keanu Reeves' new film, because apparently he is still making films, which was a surprise. Then we've got...
Did you not see John Wick?
No. We'll also be doing last week's box office figures, and then moving on to Minions. And then we will be finishing off with Dead Meat. That's my alien noise. Where we will be talking about alien films tonight and getting all deep about big monsters that come from the sky. Shit like that. So you're in for a good time tonight, even if we don't actually talk about any of that stuff. It'll be fun at least. Enjoy the ride. So, movie news. Don't know why I sang that, but what the fuck. Shut up, Emma. I'm losing it already. So, movie news. I keep saying movie news, movie news, movie news.
Just keep doing it in a different way, like movie news, movie news.
Movie news, movie news.
It's going to be stuck in my head now all night. So, my movie news is they have cast the new Spider-Man. 19-year-old English actor Tom Holland, who will appear in the third Captain America movie next year. This, I'm taking this from theatlantic.com. See, referencing and shit, because I'm a fucking professional. This will be the, what, third time in just over 10 years that we'll have a new Spider-Man? Shoot a little bit over.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it'll be like 15, 16, because wasn't the first Spider-Man like 2000, 2001?
Oh my god, remind me how old I am.
Maybe later, actually.
We've had three Spider-Mans in 13 years.
Okay.
I don't know, Tom Holland, I believe he's been in Wolf Hall or something like that?
Yeah, he's in like bits. I've not seen him in anything either, but I've heard he was in Wolf Hall and he did.
He was in the Tsunami film. The Impossible.
Get it and watch that. So, we've got a new Peter Parker, not a Miles Morales or anything else as people were, you know, wondering about. It will be Peter Parker. Hopefully it won't be another fucking origin story, because we don't need that. Everyone
knows. No, they've confirmed that. They've confirmed that. No, we're definitely not doing that. It's the film is going to start. He will be Spider-Man from the very beginning.
He's going to be in Civil War, I'm really looking forward to Civil War. And I'm hoping they're like kind of just fighting in the street, and then Captain America sees Spidey just swing by and say something sarky, and they're like, what the fuck was that? And that's all you get. That's it. Just a clip.
Yeah.
See you later. It's Tim Heard.
I heard as well. Marvel, I can't remember. I think I read this on Reddit, which is my source of all my information, that Stan Lee and Marvel got a little bit of like stick for casting a white actor as Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
And Stan Lee kind of came out and said, you know, because they were going with the Peter Parker, down the Peter Parker route, that he felt like Peter Parker should be white, because he wouldn't want to cast, like, he said he wouldn't want to cast someone who was Swedish as Black Panther or something like that. And I kind of understand where he was coming from, but I kind of understand people's disappointment almost that they didn't take the opportunity to go down a different route, because we have seen two Peter Parkers now, so it would have been nice, but, you know.
The thing is, I mean, the Pacific. I mean, what Stan Lee said doesn't make that much sense, because in that case, why cast a Brit? But the whole point of Civil War, the fact that it is actually Peter Parker, because if you actually read the comics of War, it is the spoiler. It's the one. It's the moment where Peter Parker reveals, or at least in the comic, reveals who he is. So it is a critical moment that it should be Peter Parker and make it someone else. So I think that's more where they're coming from.
Like you said, Peter Parker is such an integral part in the Civil War. I mean, I'm not going to spoil it. I mean, I could, because he's not going to be in Civil War. Basically, spoiler alert, I'm going to spoil Civil War for you now. Peter Parker starts off on one side and ends up on the other, basically. He switches sides halfway through. So, yeah. But he's not going to be in it that much. He's just going to have a little bit of a cameo, isn't it? Because Civil War is already so jam packed with so many superheroes and things like that.
It's not going to be like the comic Civil War in the briefest sense.
Warriors aren't even in it, and that they start Civil War essentially. Yeah. So, it'd be interesting to see what they do, and I'm really hoping for the Venom I goddamn deserve on screen. I'm looking at you, Sam Raimi. Mm-hmm. You know what you did. You fucking know what you did. Apparently, Ben Affleck will be directing a standalone Batman film in 2018. I have every confidence that Batfleck will be a good Batman. So.
Yeah. If that film sucks, it won't be from him.
Yeah, because he's going through, you know, his own kind of reconnaissance at the moment. He is actually quite good. It's about the fact he gave, you know, it was like Daredevil, which is possibly one
of the worst. I like Daredevil.
It's not bad.
Do you know, I really not like it. It was fine the first time watching it, and it was on like Film 4 or some film channel a couple of years ago when I was on a night shift, and I just watched it, and I was like, wow, this is actually just... It's really sloppy.
Have you seen his director's cut?
Why does it make it better?
So. It's generally better. It's like, it fleshes out some more of the characters in it, and it actually has a bit more of a grittier story. So it works better.
I think I was watching An Evening with Kevin Smith, and this was like maybe 8 years ago now. And Kevin Smith, it was like it was one-man show. And he was saying he was talking to the guy who directed Daredevil, whose name escapes me, and he was saying to Kevin Smith, who do you think should be Daredevil? And he was like, Ben Affleck. And he was like, because I just think Ben Affleck should play everyone. Whether that's true and that had any bearing in Ben Affleck being cast as Daredevil, I don't know. But
maybe.
Also this week, some sad news. Patrick McNee, who is best known for playing John Steed in the Avengers, passed away at the age of 93 in his home in California. My dad watched the Avengers a lot when I was younger, and apparently... Yeah. Is named after Emma Peel, apparently.
Oh shit, apparently, no way!
This is what my dad told me, because the story goes, my mum thought she was having a boy, and back in the late 80s, the gender scans weren't very clear, so they had the name Thomas picked out for me, which is now my brother's name. So when I was born, and they were like, my own parents were like, we haven't got a name for her, my dad suggested Emma, because of Emma Peel. So.
Oh.
Which is.
That's nuts.
I'll take that. Not just my dad was like, fuck it, we'll just call her Emma, because why the fuck not?
It's a hell of a good namesake.
My mum told me for years that I was named after a song, but I prefer to be named after Emma Peel, to be honest.
Yeah. I've just started watching them, because they're on True Entertainment, which is just a random channel somewhere there, floating around, and they just... Because I watched one, because I'd never seen it, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to watch it. They're really good. Like, it's Patrick Mahoney and Diana Rigg, and it's honestly kind of camp mad brilliance. And they've just gone into the colour ones. So I'm kind of watching them, you know, like a Sunday afternoon, no on. That's you're like, exactly oh, okay, I'll stick one is, on. It? And it was really good.
He was in the Avengers and he reprised his role in New Avengers from 1976 to 1977. And he was a voiced character in the Avengers film, which, if anyone remembers that, with Sean Connery and Damon, and I swear there was like a weather machine or some shit like that. So that's sad news for this week. As being
93 though, it's a good age.
A lot of quite high profile losses in the show business world this year. So
yeah,
that's quite sad. But it's
increasing because last year was pretty bad as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, Robert Williams and
So, let's move on to something happier. Chris or Chris? Right, Chris H or Chris B? He's got some movie news.
Well, the only one that I can think of at the top of my head, which is, again, another sad story of death, but James Horner as well, that was pretty...
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, he just passed away in a plane crash, wasn't it?
But that's another shot. He's, like, again, like another one of those workaholic, like, posers, who just worked on like countless films, and has, you know, I mean, you got him to thank for Titanic and that Celine Dion song, you know, you're welcome. But, you know, he has done like tons of other work as well, like he did Aliens, he did Wrath of Khan. I think that's one that stands out for me. I mean, he had a job of doing Star Trek music when they didn't actually have the theme tune around. So, they didn't use the theme tune at least, anyway. But, he's another one of those guys.
Yeah. I found something that is is genuinely the most random story, I think, of the month that I've managed to find. And I'm reading from the birminghammail.co.uk, so thank you, Birmingham Mail, for this one. Pop sensation Harry Styles.
Pop sensation.
Generally, if no one knows...
Did we use the word sensation quite...
No, no, it's not in, like, brackets or anything. It's not in, like, quotes. It's just, like, pop sensation. No, yeah, Harry Styles could be in line to play a young Frank Sinatra in a film directed and produced by none other than Martin Scorsese.
Fuck, Scorsese? Sit the fuck down and take your bleeding medication. How fucking dare you? How dare Martin Scorsese? The fuck is this shit?
Oh, my God. But I mean, I personally don't think he'll get it because it says he faces competition from singer and actor Justin Timberlake, who actually can act, so you know, good for him. Screen icons Leo DiCaprio, James Franco, and Eddie Redmayne. They're all apparently going for the
for
the role.
Franco, do it. I need to say my favorite Frank Sinatra story ever. This cracks me up. Do you remember Mia Farrow was married to Frank Sinatra after he broke up from Ava Gardner? And then they broke up because of the whole Rosemary's Baby thing. But they remained close. And after the Woody Allen thing came out where, you know, he was, you know, doing stuff with his adopted daughter, Suni, apparently Frank Sinatra phoned Mia Farrow and offered to break his legs.
Oh, I think that's really sweet, actually.
So that's a film I want to see. So that is an amazing idea. Frank Sinatra versus Woody Allen.
That was it, yes. Where they just like the versus each other in a boxing ring. I'm like, yes, someone beat the shit out of Woody Allen. Just go for it.
But it'll be like a chase movie, like, you know, like Frank Sinatra's like a New York Terminator type thing, just like non-stop. Yeah. And like Woody Allen just like nervously apologising, just running away from every situation. I'd see that. I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
Can we?
I never can now, because they're both dead, but... Oh, that's no
more Woody Allen.
He's
not
dead.
He's
still doing films.
He's talented, but...
Any sense of credibility of his is dead, yeah.
Well, actually, to be honest, I thought he was pretentious anyway.
Yeah,
but...
he totally
yeah.
was.
But I'm not a big Woody Allen fan, so I'm
sorry. He's one of those directors that when you go to... I mean, when I was at university, he made us watch Manhattan, and we had to write...
Do you get angry at the ending like I did?
But we had to write an analysis of Manhattan, and I was just like, this is bullshit! What the fuck is wrong with him? What the fuck is wrong with this girl? This is crap! And my tutor was just like, I'll give you a first love. Well done. Just like, fuck you, Woody Allen.
That's awesome.
Right, yes. So, movies. We're going to talk now about... Shut up, Emma. Knock, knock, which is not the start of a joke. Oh, I knew you were going to do that. Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves who? I don't know. What the fuck? Carry on.
Father's Day, Daddy.
Chocolate with sprinkles.
Everybody packed?
Yeah.
I love you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Who's there?
Yes?
We're so sorry to bother you, sir, but my phone got wet and she left hers at her house.
Well, if you guys want, you can come in and use my phone.
Guys, I have your clothes. They're pretty much dry.
Surprise!
I can't do this. I'm married. Happily.
Yes.
Knock Knock, Keanu Reeves' new film. Right, so we've seen Knock Knock.
Okay, basically, Knock Knock is a new film by Eli Roth, who it would say it's a comeback film from directing, but he has directed another film called Green Inferno, that's not out yet.
States,
so.
Isn't it a cannibal film or something?
Yeah.
And he's doing a shark film, I believe.
It's one of them weird things how he's like, he's made a film and it's like gone around the festival circuit, and at some point, after making his new film, he's had like a surge of inspiration, like, and made this other film quickly, and that somehow managed to come out before his other films come out. So it's one of them weird things. But anyway, Knock Knock. It stars Keanu Reeves. He plays like a happily married man with two kids, and his wife take his two kids off for a little weekend away while he stays home and finishes off his work as a blueprinty kind of architect.
Man.
He deals with designing. he's an architect and also a former DJ. He gets a knock on the door on a very stormy, rainy night, and it's two, shall we say, scanty clad women who are dressed up for a party and are lost, and he invites them in, and hilarity issues. No, basically, they seduce him. They basically seduce him. They basically seduce him. You know, he has a threesome, and then they basically become his worst nightmare in every possible way. It's not like it's a Marmite film. It's either you love it or you hate it, and I'm kind of undecided on whether I love it or hate it. I could even, depending on who I'm having a conversation with, I could either go with them liking it or go with them absolutely hating it, because, you know, while I did kind of enjoy it, I liked its kind of, like, trashiness, kind of, like, almost the way it was made, which was very, like, on the spot, kind of like, yeah, fuck it, just let's get shot and make it, kind of thing. You know, it does have, like, a certain sort of amount of charm, and, you know, I think Keanu Reeves is a likeable presence in this, even though, you know, even though it does kind of... The acting is a bit questionable, but, again, I am still undecided, because it's just one of those films that kind of, you know, it's entertaining. It can fall apart quite easily. I mean, I don't know how much you want to go to spoilers with this, but essentially... Generally, it's basically, essentially, it's a morality tale, basically, like, don't sleep around, essentially. It's like, these two girls come around, they're, like, kind of, like, they tempt him to have sex, and then he, like, caves, eventually. And then afterwards, they're like, right, we are gonna fuck you up, we're gonna fuck all your, like, you know, we are gonna basically punish you. But yet, they still kind of destroy his wife's artwork, and... do all these various things, which you think, yeah, but the wife hasn't done anything, why are you pushing her? But, you know, so it doesn't quite tie in. There's also a murder involved as well, which you think, well, that person who died, I didn't do anything wrong, you know, so, you know, there's no remorse over that. So if you're strictly trying to punish, you know, Keanu Reeves' character, what's the deal going on there? You know, it just doesn't tie in well. Also, you could, you know, there's a line that Keanu Reeves says towards the beginning when he, like, lets them in and says, oh, yes, you know, it's quite, you know, brave you to, like two strangers in your room, and he, like, makes a comment like, oh, well, I'm pretty sure that, you know, I can take both of you on, kind of thing. It's kind of, okay, that's a little bit of a shitty line, even though he's got a bad arm. Then they kind of use that fact that he's got a bad arm as a way that they, like, you know, they take him, basically. Which I thought, yeah, girl power. I mean, it's like, you think, if they're going to make that a point, then, you know, then why not just, like, yeah, well, you know, the girls took him, you know, well, yeah, they outsmarted him, and they took him one, like, they don't need Keanu Reeves with a dodgy arm. It's like, if only I had my, you know, it's fighting best, I would have taken, you know, it's just like, it just feels like, yeah, it's no excuse, and it's like, the film doesn't have its own convictions of, so, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, I'm willing to give it about, what, a semi-positive review?
You waited a long time before the positives.
But, you know, there is problems with it. It's like, if you stand down and pick a part of it, it will just deteriorate on your eyes. There is a lot of overreacting with Keanu Reeves. I mean, I think he does a good job at the beginning as someone who is fighting temptation, but there is a moment towards the end of the film where he's just letting rip. He's just, like, going, like, you fucking mess it! You basically gave it to me on a plate, you know, you did this thing, basically, like, sort of tempting his, like, idea, like, well, I've not had sex in ages, I'm that sort of sexually frustrated, you know, you just gave it to me, so I just caved, you know, I secretly wanted it, but, yeah, I'd say it's worth watching. Just to see what you think of it, but... A lot of people hate it, a lot of people actually quite enjoyed it.
So, verdict is, so it's one of those. Watch it for yourself and make your mind up yourself.
Basically, yes, that's my review. But, you know, that's always my review anyway, because I think, despite what I say, it's always worth seeing a film and then making your own mind up anyway, because at the end of the day, well, I've got my own opinion, what about yours? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Very well done, very concise, no rambling. That won't last long. Yeah.
We're long overdue for a ramble.
It's been 7 minutes. Okay. Back to professionalism now. Box office figures. Yeah. Right. So, at number 10, Mad Max Fury Road. It's taken £16,955,183, which is a lot of money for Britain, really, isn't it? And it seems universally acclaimed for that one. So, worth checking out because everyone seems to love it, and it's got Tom Hardy in, who seems like a nice guy. Just a nice guy. Go support Tom Hardy. Number 9, yes. Empire Strikes Back, which was the secret cinema film for this year. So it's not going to be on next week, I don't think. Oh, it's been on for 3 weeks. I am not a Star Wars fan by any means. I understand all the... I understand why it's important, and I understand why people like it, but I think I didn't watch it until I was far too old to really appreciate it for what it is, which is a jumped-up toy commercial. So... beat me. Don't come after me, Star Wars fans, really. Don't.
It's... I'll take the brunt of this. Like, Empire Strikes Back is not the greatest movie of all time. People will attack me for that. But
No. It's fine. I agree. I'm not...
Because you know why? You know why? Because it doesn't have a beginning and it doesn't have an end. It does not work on its own terms. If you watch that as a single piece of film, it's not satisfactory. It ends on a to be continued, so therefore you cannot say it's the greatest film of all time. I mean, you could say that about the first part, first part of a trilogy, because it has an end. You know, most of them do. You know, I get it's probably the best of the six films, but it's not the greatest. I mean, come on, it's not. You put that other films like Now or Taxi Driver or even Back to the Future. I mean, Back to the Future shits over Jedi of Empire. Sorry, say that, but.
Number 8, Insidious Chapter 3, which has taken $3.5 million in the last 3 weeks, which is not surprising. You know, horror films are still quite popular, no matter how shit they are. So, number 7, The Longest Ride, first week on release, $419,000. So, see how that goes. I wouldn't be surprised if it drops out the top 10 by next week. My boy Dwayne Johnson at number 6 with San Andreas. $10 million,
yay,
lads.
That's done rather well, though, isn't it?
Surprise.
Yeah. Well, have you heard? Oh, bit of movie news. He's doing Rampage.
It's too late for movie news now. You had your chance.
Sorry. I just thought that I was like, oh yeah, he's doing it off a video game. So I'm like, yes, go on, right. Because San Andreas is such a huge hit.
Entourage
so.
At number 5, which I haven't seen, but I am led to believe by the Twitters that everyone hates it.
I haven't seen it. I'm interested to actually watch it. I've never watched a TV show, so...
I think Latham might be watching the TV show, or he has watched a TV show, so...
I recommend, if you're kind of undecided about Leon Trage, listen to Mark Kermode's review of it. Because I don't listen to a lot of Mark Kermode's, like, film reviews, but just listen to it. It is so funny. He basically says it makes Sex and the City 2 look like, I don't know, Blade Runner. I don't know why, but he's just like, it's Entourage is so shit. And it treats its female characters so badly that it makes Sex and the City 2 look really feminist. And I'm just like, oh shit, okay. It just looks awful.
I mean, it does look like, kind of like the guy's version of Sex and the City 2.
That's a good point.
Oh yeah, I guess.
It does. I've never watched the Entourage, so I think if you're like a fan of the TV show, you probably get something out of it. But again, it's like what I was saying. Well, what we. Or saying about Empire, it's like if you know a film cannot hold. You know, if you need the TV show to justify the film, and the film does not work. Well, then you know it is not a good film on its own. So, I never got into it. I think the main guy, the big floppy like Harry Styles in 10 years time.
God, what's his name?
Guy. Adrian Grenier.
Well done, because he's just gotten those, like, oh, really? You've got no appeal to me whatsoever, and you look way too smug to be that popular, so,
The only reason I know him is because he was in a film called Drive Me Crazy,
which was
the Britney Spears. We've listened to it in 1999, and it's just because I quite liked the Britney Spears song back then, so that's the only reason I knew it, because we used to get quite dodgy, free cable TV years and years and years ago, and it was always on a loop, and I just remember being like, oh, I quite like the song, and that's how I saw that film. Okay.
Number four, Mr. Holmes, Ian McKellen's older Sherlock Holmes story.
I've got to see this. It
does. It's taken 741,000 in its first week, which is it's a good going. So
we'll see
how that goes. Spy at number three, almost. It's taken over 7 million in 3 weeks, and it did seem to be like it's been pushed quite a lot. So, and that got quite favourable reviews from our good selves.
I think it's too long.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I really like it. I think it's probably my favourite comedy film of the past couple of years, but yeah, it could do with trimming a bit. But I still like it. I still thought it was really funny. And
Also, what's her face?
Amanda Hart.
Yeah, she can just not be in it. It's just like, yeah, she's not funny. It's just too long, too baggy, and the whole thing at the end with the bad guy, just like, I've been barely in the entire film, and I'll show up, I'm going to be the villain! It's just like...
Yeah, the villain needed work, but...
It's a shame, because he's a really good actor, because he's in Danny Collins, and I thought he was, like, probably the best thing in it.
Bobby Cannavale. I think it's really weird, though, and this is just a real side, but he and Rose Byrne, who plays Raina in the film, they've been going out for a few years, but they keep getting put in films together, and I think it's really funny. Because they're in that, is it Adults? I want to say Adult Swim, is it's not? But they've been in films together. Like, they were in Annie at Christmas. Now they're in this. They're doing another film together. And it's just really weird how they just keep getting paired up. Or is it like a package deal now?
It could be. It could be like one of them, that's how they got together, the casting. Going like, oh, fancy meeting you here. That kind of thing.
Maybe they should have really good chemistry with each other. We don't know.
Take That Live concert was number two.
Jesus.
So, less said about that.
That doesn't count, that's a film.
Take it up with the BFI.
It was in cinemas. So,
and number one, no surprise,
I know.
Jurassic World, which in 2 weeks has taken over 38 million.
Oh my God.
It's a monster of a movie. Well done, Chris Pratt.
You were just waiting to use that, weren't you?
So, that wraps up the box office.
Takes a bite out of the competition.
That was for last weekend from up to the 21st of June. I should have said that at the beginning, but I fucking didn't. Whatever.
Roaring at the box office. There,
so, our final film of this evening is prequel/sequel/shameless cash-in, Minions.
Minions. Minions have been on this planet far longer than we have. They go by many names. Dave, Carl. Oh, that one is Norbert. He's an idiot. They all share the same goal. To serve the most despicable master around.
Sit, big boss. Sit up, banana. Yum, yum. Ay, ay, ay.
Finding a master was easy. Keeping a master, that's where things got tricky.
Minions, if you have been living under a rock or you don't have a child, Minions are those yellow little blobs who appear in the Despicable Me films. This is the origin story, almost, and it's basically Minions have always been around, and they like to ally themselves with the biggest, baddest monster, person, whatever, and they lose all purpose if they don't. And after they kill Napoleon, I think it is, in the film, they are very depressed and very sad. So
yeah, Napoleon.
Kevin, Stuart, and Bob go off to find themselves a new master. Now, if I didn't have a child, I wouldn't have gone to see this film. Because it lacks a depth that Pixar is so good at. It's just a really brightly coloured. It's just for kids. It's not for adults. And Pixar films, they kind of always have a message and a meaning, don't they? And this didn't have any of that. I was really bored after like 20 minutes of it. It was just the pacing seemed really off, And the animation, you know, it's animated. It's not much I can say. There was a little bit in the middle where the villain, Scarlet Overkill, who is voiced by Sandra Bullock, is telling Three Minions a story. And they changed the animation style slightly, and I really liked that. That was quite good.
Yeah, that was cool.
It's just really bland. And I didn't really laugh at it either. There wasn't anything I found particularly funny. My son absolutely, utterly fucking loved it. Freddy doesn't go to the cinema that often because he has a problem with his ears and certain frequencies really upset him, so he will walk out of the film. But he was enthralled by this. He stood up the whole time the film was on, and he kept shouting really loudly because he's a bit deaf as well. So instead of just going, "Oh, mommy, that was funny," he was like, "Mommy, that was so funny," which is really embarrassing.
To the delight of everyone else.
Yeah, but I'm with his mothers who are, like, if that, I'd been sitting there with someone else and that had been someone else's kid, I'd be like, "Shut the fuck up." But anyone else, I'm like, "Don't you look at my child like that. How fucking dare you? You leave him be."
Yeah. To be fair, your son was probably telling everyone else where to laugh. Yeah, that was really funny. Hint. Fucking
to be honest,
hint.
Freddie was the only child in that whole screening.
Oh, okay.
There was one guy who just kept going, "Nah. Nah," like that. And that was like the funniest thing about it. I did ask him what did he like about Minions, and his exact answer was, "When the minion goes giant and punches the rocket lady in the face." So it was,
that was the one thing he liked.
Like I said, he enjoyed it. It's not geared towards, like, I think they had the trailer on for Inside Out before it. And that seemed like, I laughed at that, and my mum laughed at that. And it kind of seemed like the thing that older kids could enjoy as well. But with Minions, it seemed like there's a very specific, like, say, 3 to 7 age limit on it. Because it is what it is. It's exactly what you expect it to be. I mean, the amount of Minions crap that is all over the shops now. And they'll probably make it Spiffle 3 or a Minions 2, because they're going to make money off it.
I mean, people are weirdly enthralled by Minions. which is one of the things that I've never got, and I've never, like... I mean, they don't get on my nerves so much, but I'm just kind of like, I just don't get what everyone's like. Just, "I love the Minions, they're great." And I'm like, they're just okay. I don't get what the big appeal... I mean, quite frankly, I wasn't waiting for this from any anticipation at all. But, you know, it's vaguely enjoyable. I mean, I think I laughed probably about once or twice. I think the biggest laugh I got was actually towards the end with the guitar bit.
Oh, yeah.
When he gets a new guitar and then just smashes it up and you're like, oh, shit. That made me laugh. But generally, I kind of sat there with my arms crossed going, "Yeah, okay." Just like, you know, not like kind of bored, but just like, "Yeah, okay, kind of, all right, fine, yeah."
I think what you said about the age range is right, Emma, because I went with a family friend and her 9-year-old, who I've known since she was born, and I said, "Do you mind if I come along?" Because I explained it, all that sort of thing. And I sat there, and honest to God, the 9-year-old was barely entertained. Like, because she liked the Despicable Me films, and she was like, "Oh, okay, I'll go see it," you know, all that sort of thing. And it was just, it's a bit like Candy Floss. It's brightly coloured, it's light, it's vaguely sweet, but it is for kids. It's completely throwaway fun, and you don't need it. Like, no one was like, "Do you know, we kind of need the full backstory of the Minions." You could have fit the first 5 minutes, which just explains it, into a Despicable Me film, and that was it. Because you didn't need everything else, like with the overkills and with, you know, all the random actors popping up. It's like you had Alison Janney in this, you had John Hamm, you had Sandra Bullock. And it's great that they're doing, like, this stuff, but it's a shame when it's a bit kind of lackluster and it is just a really obvious cash-in.
This is like, it's DreamWorks, isn't it? And my problem with DreamWorks is, like, I really enjoyed How to Train Your Dragon. I think that's an excellent film. But besides, like, Shrek and How to Train Your Dragon, their films do lack a certain depth to them that allows them to have this big crossover. That's the way I feel. And, you know, I mean, some Pixar films aren't great, like Cars isn't great, and Brave was alright, but there's some Pixar films that would be in, like, my top 10, like Up. I adore Up. Up and Wall-E are just brilliant films. I could watch Wall-E over and over and over again. And even though Freddie enjoyed this, when we came out, I was like, "Did you enjoy it? Would you like to see it again?" And he went, "No." No. And he's 5, you know what I mean? My boyfriend kind of said it's almost like they could have made this as like a TV series for like Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network, you know, kind of. And it might have worked better that way. Like little snippets of like the Minions and Stone Age and kind of build up to them meet and grew and then lead into like a Despicable Me 3, maybe. But I kind of think as well it lacked the presence of Gru as a character and the girls and things like that. Because I really enjoyed Despicable Me 1, 2, not so much. But I do think the Minions work better as, you know,
sidekicks.
I mean, the Despicable Me 2 trailer. You know the bit where they set the desk on fire and there's the minion going nee-do, nee-do, nee-do. I thought that was so funny. I used to laugh every time I saw it. But they do, I think they need they need like someone else to...
Master!
Big boss, big boss.
Yeah, do you know what this reminds me of, weirdly, and it's because it's just a couple of years out, is the Penguins of Madagascar. Because they've done the same thing, is that the penguins were really popular in the Madagascar films, to the point where my dad, who doesn't really like animated films, he's like, I like the penguins, because they're just like mafiosos. And I'm like, yeah, that's it's funny. The film is average at best, but they're just like, they've got a TV show now on Nickelodeon of the penguins, and it's just weird.
Like, I was in Primark over the weekend with my boyfriend, and... he was getting a shirt or something, and there was like minion shirts for men, and we went upstairs and there was minion shirts for girls, and then there was minion pajamas for women, and then there was the kids store, and he was like, this is everywhere, this is ridiculous. And I was like, it's money, it's all about the money, and it will make money, because it's like you said, it's candy floss, that's it. I mean, Freddy, like, this sounds terrible, I won't let Freddie watch any piece of trash film that comes on. I don't care if it's a cartoon or some stuff. I'm like, it's not worth watching. I know it's not. Put something else on. And he's like, but Mom, I want to see the talking dog. And I'm just like, no, watch something good. Watch Wreck-It Ralph or something like that. Because even when I used to work in the cinema, we'd get films like all the time that would come out about half term. They'd be out a week or two. You wouldn't see many trailers for them. But the parents would take their kids to go see them. And they never made a lot of money. Like, Alpha and Omega, I remember that vaguely being out, and Escape from Planet Earth, and things like that. Things that are just designed. I almost feel like they are produced, written, and put together in like a year, and then just thrown out. I mean, I'm not sure how much it costs to animate a film like that anymore, but they're obviously making enough money on them to throw them out that quickly. It's getting into this really kind of... It's like a factory, isn't it? Like... I imagine they've got a group of people writing scripts for a kids' film, and then they move along to the next department, and then they start another script, and it's just like, cute character, talking dog, precocious little kid. That's it, moving on. Brightly coloured. I mean, I do say this as a parent. My kids get into this, they want to watch the same thing all the time. And Freddy goes through these phases like it was Wreck-It Ralph, and then now it's the Lego Movie and DuckTales. I mean, he was watching the Lego Movie the other day, and he started singing Everything is Awesome, and Freddy never, ever, ever sings. It's just something he doesn't do. But I don't mind that, because I can watch it, but if he was watching something like this all the time, especially with the summer holidays coming up, I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
Things though, there will be homes that will have that, though. And it'll just be like, banana! Like... All day long for about 6 months.
Netflix makes it 10 times worse as well, because all that shit's on Netflix. The only thing, this is going to sound really silly as well, but because Freddy has a speech impediment, he can't say certain words, and it's such a picky little thing, but you know the way the minions say bello instead of hello? I'm like, my kid does not need to be walking around thinking that's the way you say hello. And
I just realised that it's actually kind of like a mixture of French and kind of Japanese and all these kind of various little accents. That's the only time I picked up on that, rather than just like, gobbledygook.
And like, obviously, I'm not at all saying they should speak properly, because there's children who can't talk properly and they're going to take this on. But I notice if Freddy is watching a TV show where you've got characters like this who speak a bit funny, he will imitate them, and because he has a problem with his speech anyway, it's so much harder to get him out of the cycle of saying things correctly. So it's weird to see the influences films like this have on such young children, especially in the development. And I know that's not going to be a concern for pretty much anyone else who watches this film, but it's just little things like that I pick up on, which is why I don't mind.
But it's a valid concern, and it's a valid thing that you go through. So it's worth mentioning, it's worth talking about.
I do find, like, there's certain films Freddie will watch, and he'll learn things. Like, he watches, like, Dinosaur Trains, so he knows all the names of the dinosaurs, and he was watching a cartoon about space, and he was going out and telling me all about the planets. So kids are so impressionable at that age, and it is kind of like, I want him to learn something, but he'd be entertained at the same time, because this, in a couple of years, I probably won't care as much, because he'll be a little bit older, but right at that age he is now,
start taking him to 12 A's and shit.
I kind of want a little bit more to myself, just because if he is going to sit with the television all the time while I'm working and things, I'd like to know that he's getting something out of it and he's not just rotting his brain. And that's such a mum thing to say, but yeah, it kind of, I wish there was a little bit, just another little level to it almost.
I mean, I did like the 60s vibe of it. Like,
soundtrack was good.
Yeah, because you had all the 60s, so you basically excuse to throw all that Who and the Doors and things like that. Also, was it John Hamm plays the I liked his character.
I liked
he was kind of like.
I liked it. Was it Jennifer Saunders, the Queen?
Yes.
Is that who it was?
Jennifer Saunders.
The voice cast, it should have like a really, like you said, a decent voice cast, but it just didn't seem to be.
Yeah.
I wanted more of that crying family though. I mean, they just kind of like, I kind of like them, and they just disappeared.
Wait, they'll get a spin-off next.
See, things I'd watch that. I'd seriously would watch that. I mean, that's Michael Keaton and Alison Jenny, wasn't it?
Yes.
So I mean, but I will say this: like, it is nice to see that in a moment of time where everyone's complaining about in most blockbusters how like a city like just gets destroyed and like how like there's anonymous civilian casualties, and like, every time that happens in a Marvel or DC film, everyone goes like, "Ugh, not again." It happened in Minions, and I don't see anyone saying shit about it. I know, but
the rules are the same.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's essentially, yeah, exactly. I mean, the only difference is it's cartoon, so this cartoon makes a difference. I'm sorry, London gets fucking destroyed. But yeah, I just find how funny how people's like, you know, they'll kick off about one thing and then same thing happens in one film and it goes completely unnoticed.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So, Minions, we're all a bit,
banana.
And that's our opinion.
it was all right. It'll sort. You know, the kids will like it.
Yeah,
that's what it's made for.
Do.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible. It was just all right.
Well, that wraps up our future presentation for this evening. Now, ladies and gentlemen, imagine if you will. See, this is my new intro. It's clever. This. Imagine if you will.
Imagine a time
of
really wrong.
I'm trying to create some ambience and you just ruin it. It's not, I'm not going to be able to do this now. I'm totally fucking up. Right. Imagine, if you will, you're standing outside your house on a warm, clear night. Maybe you've stepped out to have a cigarette. Maybe just to get some fresh air. You look up in the night sky and you see a bright light. It's a star, you think at first, but oh no. Stars don't change colour. It's a plane, you think, but oh no, it's moving too fast. And as you stand there, transfixed by this light, you realise suddenly you can't move. You're paralysed with fear or by something else. And as the spaceship descends closer and closer to you, that's when you realise you're dead meat. Dun dun dun! It's fucking cool, you both know it.
Nice.
And if I had theme music, that's where I'd play it. So let's all imagine that I just played the X-Files theme music.
Du, du, du.
Du, du, du. So, if you didn't get from my muddled introduction then, this is Dead Meat. Welcome. Have a seat. Pour yourself a drink if you want. Tonight we're talking about aliens. Now, some people might say that aliens are science fiction and they don't belong in a horror section. And I say to them, shut the fuck up. They're scary. They belong in horror. And I've just reduced genre studies down to that single sentence. No one's going to argue with me there, are they?
No, because then they can make a horror film about anything.
Very good point.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, like, you'd say, well, not a horror film, and that's about two girls.
Well, women are scary. Wise man once said, space, the final frontier. See, clever. See what I did there? Mankind has always been fascinated with space. It's the great unknown. It is the final frontier. It cost a hell of a lot to get us there, and we can only go so far as the fucking moon, and we're not even going there anymore. There's so much about the universe that we don't know, and even the stuff that we do know is fucking hard to explain. You've got black holes and dark matter and how are stars born and all this kind of crazy crap, and the biggest question is, are we alone in the universe? Now, I know we talked last time a little bit about the 1950s and horror films back then, but I'm just going to briefly go over that. After the war ended, science fiction horror films really emerged. And there was two reasons for this. One was that the mad scientist replaced the horrors of before, because we'd had the nuclear bomb, we'd had the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So Pan's horror films, we saw the birth of Godzilla, because we were asking the question, what happens when we unleash this gigantic power on the world, the destruction we have caused to our own planet, what is going to happen then? So we had these type of films with, you also had Them and The Blob and things like that, where we were asking questions about what we had done to our own planet and what the consequences were. The flip side of that was America got really, really fucking shit scared about communism. And the House of Un-American Activities Committee, which was set up in 1939 originally to uncover citizens with Nazi ties, kind of changed tact and started looking for communism. They looked for communist spies, basically, and people were dragged in and questioned about their loyalties to the country because they were really scared that there was this silent communist invasion going on. And films like The Day They Stood Still and Invasion of the Body Snatchers really explored these questions. We had in The Day They Stood Still, you got Klaatu comes down in a big spaceship and he looks human. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, people are replaced. You got these pods, but they look the same. The only difference is with the Klaatu and with the Invasion of Body Snatchers is they are emotionless and they're cold, and it's really hard to tell if they are one of us or one of them. And that them is in inverted commas there. It's got your quotes on. It was the worry that your parents, your children, your neighbour could be one of them, and you couldn't tell the difference. And this was it was a real fear for America. The films of the 1950s really fed on this fear and anxiety of things being out of our control. In Monsters from the Id by Margaret Terrett, I can't remember writing, she said that science fiction films reflect social anxiety about increasing technological prowess and its responsibility to control the gigantic forces of destruction it possesses. And that really fits in with talking about the bomb and things like that. We had a lot of, you know, mad scientists became the new crazed doctors. You know, you had those little flashing glasses and the intelligence they possessed in the eyes of the cinema goers. But what they were doing with that, you know, this intellect, they were using it to, you know, create these monsters. And these monsters were only being created by what mankind had done to our own planet. So that was really scary for a lot of people. When, if you talk about like alien films, I mean, there are a few that come to mind. And today, we are going to be discussing a little bit The Day the Earth Stood Still and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And we're also going to be talking about the alien film, Alien. It's simple, it's there in the title, it tells you everything you need to know. We're also going to be talking about The Thing. And I would also like to talk about Attack the Block, because I know Chris really likes it and I really like it. And it's a little bit different to your other alien films. So, if you're looking at the 1950s, alien films, it was really a threatening of the collective. If you in The Day They Stood Still, Klaatu is basically being sent down from his planet saying, get your shit together or we are going to come down and fucking take over, we will bomb the fuck out of you, because these aliens apparently saw how we were using the bomb and were really scared about this. It's also a similar theme in the remake with Keanu Reeves, which I think was about 2008. It was about us being watched by some sort of higher power. In Alien and The Thing, it's a threatening of the self. It's much more isolated. The Thing, as everyone knows, it's on an Arctic base. It's a very small crew. Alien is in space millions and millions of light years away. So it was more about like the threat on your own, on yourself, and how you protect yourself. But the other films were about humanity as a whole. They were about how do we protect ourselves, all of us, from this thing we don't understand and we don't know. And Invasion of the Body Snatchers, there's no real... With most of these films, there's no real reason why we are being attacked by these aliens. In Alien and The Thing, it's basically just about procreation and survival for the alien. But in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, it was this kind of quiet invasion, this taken over. Just, you're not really worthy to live on this planet, so we're going to come in and just take it from you. Which, you know, it's a bit bang on when you think about it, really, isn't it? When we look at Alien and The Thing, we are moving away from these human-like monsters to shit of nightmares. These things are crap you couldn't dream of, even if you wanted to. So if we talk about Alien now, it's an excellent film. It's beautiful. The Alien is just brutal. It's a perfect killer machine, basically. It's perfectly designed for what it's supposed to do, which is just procreate and fuck shit up. I have another quote here, because I do like my quotes. It's from Aliens, Mothers, Monsters and Marines, which appeared in Film as Text, and it's by Thomas Caldwell. And he says, the alien is the perfect organism. Its capacity to kill, parasitic reproductive system, and acid blood defense mechanism puts to the top of the evolutionary food chain. And, you know, you first see it as it's the facehugger gets Kane. And feel free to jump in if I get this wrong at any point. The facehugger jumps on Kane and attaches themselves to it, and they can't remove it because every time they cut it, it strangles him. It's bleeding fucking acid blood.
Digs in deeper and yeah.
It falls off, it runs away, and then not long later, we've got the infamous chest burster scene where he's at dinner and he starts convulsing and this shit comes out of his chest. Now, obviously, that's all to do with the fear of Earth and all that kind of stuff, but we won't talk too much about that today. We're just going to focus on the monster. The alien runs off and it starts to grow at a crazy speed. Now, from what I haven't seen the film in about a year now, but the alien, when it's just killing, it's not killing and impregnating or taking anything from the rest of the crew, it's just killing them. I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
From what I remember.
In the beginning, I mean, I think there is like, I do remember the director's cut where you find some of the crew.
There's a cocoon thing, aren't they? I think that's in the director's cut.
So it may vary on what version you see.
So the alien, it's basically a small crew with increasingly dwindling numbers against the alien. Once again, I'm not going to go too much into Ripley and all that kind of thing, but it ends up with Ripley versus the alien, and Ripley basically, she uses the ideas the rest of her crew had to defeat the monster in the end. But you've got some really tense scenes in this movie. As she's running to the escape pod, you're just thinking, oh, it's fucking behind you. You're about to get so fucked up. You are never going to escape. And the cat just ramps up the tension. You think, oh, you're dead. You're definitely an alien or something. Like, it sets you on edge. And the alien, it's just so... It's so otherly, isn't it? There's nothing human about it. It's got this elongated head and the extra jaw, and it's dripping with goo, and it's
got long arms and
The Scotland, that's what gets me.
It's very kind of Lovecraftian. It's very kind of otherworldly, and I know it was inspired by H.R. Geiger. And it's very, you can read into like the subtext of the thing all you want, and of the extra jaws and the kind of the bulbous head and all that sort of thing, but the
point is that head's meant to look like a penis, isn't it? And that kind of
I've always wondered, do they have an assigned gender? Because I know obviously there's the queen, but then if they are genderless, does that then kind of tie into the whole thing about because what they're effectively doing is they are, in a way, it's kind of an allegory for rape, for how they get their victims, because they force their way into the mouth and then they force them to give birth.
Definitely what it is, isn't it? It's just about this violation, this really horrific birthing, the way they're born. It's all about this violation. And the alien itself, because it's not like anything you've really seen before, it's so out there. It's so out of your context of what you understand an alien to look like. I mean, even Star Trek, it's a guy in a rubber suit. You know what I mean? That's what it is. But this, it's just so other, and it's such a... I'm trying to think of the word. It goes so much against our nature. It's so out there. It's so shocking.
It's so kind of inherently unnatural. It's something we're not used to at all. We're just like, this...
It gets Kane first, and it essentially impregnates him. It's an unnatural birth, and it's an unnatural reproduction. It just... Everything about it is wrong. And I can't remember what year E.T. came out. You had E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
82. It's the year I was born. Because E.T. came out at the same time as John Carpenter's The Thing. I think it released in the same week, and John Carpenter's The Thing like bombed. Obviously, E.T. was like a mega hit. So that was kind of like the weird kind of thing.
You know, it was just so violent, and it's so everything that is wrong, you know? Violent and aggressive, and it's fucking damn near unkillable. And the fact that the film itself is so claustrophobic, you know, they're on their own. There is no help coming. Even though, like, Ash is like, haha, I have ruined the comm system. Fuck you, you're all dead. What else, even if he hadn't done that, no one's going to come help them. No one. And this thing took down a team of, there's like 8 people in this film at the beginning. It took down this team in like less than a day. So what's an army going to do with it? And it's that kind of, it's that worry of like, one of these things took down this many people in such a short amount of time. What could 10 do? What could 100 do? You know, and it's that kind of, what can you do in that situation? I mean, what would you do now if one scuttled up your window? You'd be fucked. You'd be fucked.
No. Well, that's what really makes it work, both as a villain and as a true kind of horror film, in that in horror films a lot of it is about the chase, and there's always the idea of, you know, oh, you're running through a house or a street, and there's always outside, but this is terrifying because there is no outside. Literally, the only way to escape would be to kind of throw it and kill yourself and die in the vacuum or whatever. But then you've got the alien, who, like you said, he's so other. He's so categorised, or she, or it, he's so categorised as other. That's what's scary to us, because we can't quantify it. We can't go, oh, that's just, that, you know, it's kind of scarier than a serial killer. Because a serial killer, like, it's flesh and blood, whereas this, we're like, how the hell do you actually do this? And it's not a shadow out the corner of your eye. I mean, it is, in a way, but that's what it makes it so scary, because you can't relate it to anything. It's not like Psycho, where it was, oh, it's a guy in a thing, and then you can kind of quantify it. This is the unknown. It is something in that black space of, you know, night sky. That is what's scary. The unknown.
It is, and it's, like you said, it's everything about it. It's just, it's unnatural. Like, even the noise it's making, there's a point, I think, where Ripley and the captain are on the side of the ship, and you can hear it screaming, like, just making that horrible screeching noise. And imagine, like, hearing that coming for you. I know in Aliens, the scene where they know they're coming, and they can see them, and they know they're on top of them and things like that, and they've got the gun turrets going, and they know how many bullets they've got, and it's that sense of, holy shit, like, there was 1,000 bullets in those things and they are still coming. Like, what can you do? There's nothing you can do. And Ripley damn near kills herself trying to get rid of it anyway. It's so terrifying. And like you said, it's got a lot to do with where the hell did this thing come from? What kind of life cycles they got? What's its home planet? Like, what is its purpose? And there is no purpose. It kills and reproduces and kills and reproduces. And I know you could boil it down and say, well, that's all we do as people. But, you know, we have the ability to make art and music and to create and all that kind of thing as well. This doesn't do any of those things. It doesn't, just, we just don't understand it, and we can't understand it. And it goes back to this whole, we don't like not being in control, and we don't like not knowing. But like you said, Chris, we don't know anything about space. We just don't. It's just a big black thing in the sky.
That's always scary. If you know, it's like the thing that's always scary, whatever scares anyone. And it's always like, what context? It's like, it's not knowing, so therefore you put it onto basic nature, like the dark. Like, as a kid, we're all scared of the dark. We're scared of the dark because we can't see, we don't know what's in front of us, we don't know what's there. Yeah, it's that basic thing. And so it's whatever, so if you think about whenever you're scared, it's because you don't know. You don't know what's going to be behind that door. You don't know. Like, you know, see a horror movie, and there's a monster / killer. It's always scarier before that killer's actually revealed. As soon as the killer's revealed, it's like it has no scare factor whatsoever. It just becomes like it's a thrill,
like,
bit.
Like you were just saying then about being scared of the dark. It's like, space is the ultimate dark, and space is so big you can't actually say how big it is in numbers that your brain can even understand. Like, that's freaky. That even freaks me out.
No, it's infinite. It's just like, it's just, it just keeps going.
That. How can it be infinite? How can there be no end to it? That freaks me out. That scares the shit out of me. But But
yeah,
when we look at the thing it's quite similar in some ways, especially if you want to really look into the themes of like sex and violation and all that kind of thing. So this is an all-male crew in the Arctic. The Thing, I should say, is also a remake of The Thing from Another World, which I believe is a Howard Hawks film, which is based on a short story called Who Goes There, which is a fucking excellent name for a short story, if you ask me. So it starts off with the husky dog running up, and then the best way to say it is shit goes down really fast and really graphically. The difference between The Thing and Alien is that the alien will kill you and it'll burst out your chest and that's it, but The Thing infects you. And then the way the bodies start to just disintegrate, and I've heard that The Thing is really an analogy for the AIDS epidemic, because people didn't really know what was going on and they just saw these people whose bodies were basically just giving up on them, people who didn't look like themselves anymore. And it goes back to the original, like, 1950s, that the scene where they're all like, they've got the blood test and they're gonna keep it up. Like, yeah, that, like, it could be any one of us. You know, and you're not really going to know until it's too late and it's fucking chewing your arm off with its leg or something like that.
Yeah.
I think in some ways, The Thing is more overt than Alien. Alien can be quite subtle, like you said, Chris, about, like, it's the corner of your eye and it's moving really fast. The Thing is just like, look at this weird thing, look at this weird thing, look at this weird thing, like, over and over and over again. And it's relentless and it never, ever, ever stops with it. It just keeps coming, and every time you think, can't get any worse than that guy's chest just biting at the fella's arm, it gets worse. The head starts walking and it just...
It's just like what Kurt Russell says, is like, you gotta be fucking shit.
That's exactly
yeah.
And it's... What I like about these two films especially is it's a small scale invasion. It's kind of, I know the prequel to The Thing with the Shannon Elizabeth tried to give some sort of like backstory to it, but
Mary Elizabeth,
Shannon Elizabeth, oh,
wait, what the fuck is
that? It's not like, we don't know originally where it came from, we don't know what it wants, and it doesn't seem to want to reproduce or procreate. It doesn't seem to want to do anything except what it does. And once again, it's kind of like, you can't reason with it, because what fucking language does it speak? And you don't know what it wants, and you probably couldn't give it what it wants, and it's going to get you anyway. Especially, like, the Arctic is such a good setting. The same way Alien is, like you said, Chris, there is no outside. Outside will kill you just as quickly as this thing's going to kill you. And it's like the last scene with MacReady, I know everyone says that he knows that the guy with him's a thing, so he puts gasoline in the bottle, because the thing's not going to be able to taste it, and he knows he's going to die anyway. He knows they're both dead, no matter what. So it's like, would you rather take your chances in the freezing cold tundra, or would you rather be ripped apart by this awful parasite? And it's just, in some ways, because it's not really got any sort of physical form in the same way Alien, the xenomorph in Alien has. It's just, it is what it is. It's a head scuttling around on the floor, and it's a big mouth in someone's chest. Like, there's no, it's even harder to quantify than xenomorph, because it's not really physical. And I think because it mimics people, or it takes them over, or whatever it does, it ramps up the paranoia so much. And like I said, it does kind of link back to the original 1950s film, because you're like, well, yeah, okay, I know he's got a xenomorph inside him because I saw the thing on his face before, but I don't know that you're not the thing, because how the hell would I know if you're the thing? And the fact that it's just called the thing, that's it. There's no word for it. That's all it is.
I mean, as a horror film, because I've only seen I think I've seen a bit of the 70s one with Kurt Russell, but, you know, if you tie it back to the 1950s, because it is going through, and it is kind of rooted in the Red Scare, and it is in the idea that anyone could be this scary, unknowable horror, and it's what ties to a lot of 1950s alien films, is of this other person who, they look like your neighbours, they talk like them, they have the same habits and all that sort of thing, but underneath, they could be a communist, or an alien, or a murderer, or that sort of thing. So that is what I think makes The Thing quite scary, in that you don't know, you literally could be looking at someone who you've known for years, and it turns out they've been assimilated or killed or copied by this thing that doesn't, like you said, it doesn't really have a physical form. So then that really does tie into kind of the communism and the McCarthyism and all that sort of thing, which I think did scare them.
We're going to talk about Attack the Block now, because, like I said, me and Chris are quite
big fans of
this. This reminds me of The Faculty a little bit. in the way that, okay, it's not an isolated area. We're talking inner city London, faculties in a high school, and it's only the kids that know what's going on, really. There's a lot of horror films, especially in slasher films, there's a lot of mistrust of parental figures and people in power. And Attack the Block plays this up really well, because I think you could say a lot about race, the issues of race in Attack the Block, the way Moses is treated.
Yes.
And not just that, because, you know, his friends, the gang that Moses hangs around with, there's a lot of different ethnicities and things like that. But the way they're treated as young people, I mean, a lot of people I know don't like this film because they say they felt no sympathy for the characters. They felt no emotional connection with the main characters. And when you first see Moses, he's mugging that poor girl. But then he's kind of like, there's that drug dealer guy almost who's kind of in charge. He wants Moses to sell drugs for him. So Moses is kind of almost powerless. And you forget that Moses is like, he's 15, 16 in this film. And there's a lot to be said about how their upbringing in this tower block, it kind of prepares them for this, what happens. If anyone hasn't seen the film, Attack the Block starts with a group of kids mugging this woman. They see this big bright light in the sky, go and find this alien, which they kick its, I think this is the exact quote, they kick its fucking head in, basically, for no other reason except they're a bunch of horrible fucking little kids, that's it. However, it seemed like this alien it's a female who was crash landed on the planet on its way to somewhere else, and its senses attracted the bigger aliens, which are described in the film as big gorilla wolf motherfuckers. Believe that.
I love that description.
So the kids are basically trying to survive the night with all these huge, horrible, screechy, fluorescent teeth aliens coming at them, and they don't know why. And no one really believes him except for Nick Frost, who is a weed dealer. They kind of taken on, I can't remember the girl's name, Jodie Whittaker. And I really like this film. It's so small scale. It's Joe Cornish, Adam and Joe made this film. It's funny, it's witty, it's got a really good pace. The aliens are so different from like what we talked about previously. They're just these big hairy galloping things, and then you've got this whole thing with the police are kind of always on the edges of the estate, but they never come close enough to really help them. So they're on their own, and they kind of take it upon themselves, like, we have to do something about this now, because I believe Moses says this is our block, that's it, and he's like, we know it's not much and we know it's a shithole, but this is our home and you don't come into our block. There's also a couple of scenes with one of the younger lads, and he lives with his nan. And she's like, where are you going, sweetheart? And he's like, just playing football, nana. But he's like getting his nunchucks out and stuff like that. I enjoy this film. And I'm going to hand over to you now, Chris, to explain to me why exactly you love Attack the Block.
Okay. I really love it because it's really rare to see an alien film that takes place in an inner city setting. And because obviously we're British, we connect with it a bit more than, say, an American one or from, you know, a different part of the world. I really like it because you mentioned that it touches on race, and it does. I think it handles it really well. I mean, so that it's really surprising that this is written by a white guy and directed by a white guy, as you said, Joe Cornish. But he did have a lot of help from local communities and that sort of thing to get the language right. I mean, there's a brilliant line where he says, "Oh, that was it. Black kids or black boys weren't killing themselves fast enough when they introduced drugs into them and introduced guns. So now they're sending aliens to kill us." And I was just like, "That is actually really."
I totally forgot about that line. Like, he's talking about they sent the drugs in, so they sent the guns in, and like Moses at one point is convinced that it's the government trying to wipe them out. And at first I was like, "Ugh," but the more I thought about it, I was like, "Fucking hell!" Like. You think of it from his point of view.
It's not that far a stretch.
I mean, to take it in another direction, I know I've read online that some people believe that AIDS was created by the government to wipe out two distinct sets of people on this planet who suffer a lot of prejudice, and that is gay people and black people. I'm not saying I believe that or I don't believe that, but a lot of people do believe that, and you can see why, especially when, even nowadays, I know we've had, just this past week, gay marriage has been legalised in all of America, which is, it's excellent news, you know, it's about fucking time. But there's still so much racism and there's still so much homophobia going on. And you can kind of feel for Moses, like, as someone who's been brought up in this really hard environment, why he would think that. And to me, a white girl, you think, oh, that's a bit silly. But he really believes that, and you really feel that he believes that as well.
That's what I think is kind of ridiculous when they say... And I've had people who've watched it and they're like, oh, I don't really, you know, you can't really sympathize with the main characters. I'm like, are you kidding me? these poor kids who've grown up in, you know, a relatively deprived area. I mean, admittedly, they're in the UK, which is still a sort of a good country to be in. But if you look at the lives, if you look at the expectations, because black teenage youth, particularly boys, they still face institutional racism. They still face a hell of a lot of, you know, even external open racism out there. When he's going through the... Oh, no, it's when Sam, who is the nurse who they mugged and later kind of become allies with, she's going through Moses's flat to, like, detonate a bomb or something, or let some gas, and she just realises that, yeah, he's tough and he's the leader and that sort of thing, but he's 14 or he's 15. Because she sees, like, the football dude. Exactly. He's got, like, the football. And he's got, like, the school photo and everything. And it's just, it's like, it really brings home, because you see several of these kids die for no reason. They're not, it's not like the horror rules where, oh, they drank or they had sex or they did this or they did that.
They are bastards,
well, no, but they don't. But they don't get specifically killed for that, like, and the ones who survive.
You kind of feel like they really are products of their environment, and they're just doing they're doing, because that's what you do to survive. Moses' group is made up of different ethnicities as well. I mean, the really young kid, I can't remember his name now, he's white, and I think it's some of the other kids are, like, of different ethnic backgrounds, different religions, so it's kind of like this whole... mixture of different experiences that are brought together, but Moses is definitely the hero, and he kind of has... kind of like at the very end when he's like, they've got the plan and he's standing there and he's just got like the vest top on and the hat pulled out and he's standing there like glaring this alien in the face, and you're like, it's almost like he's growing up.
He's a superhero
as well. And I think Attack the Block, it didn't seem to get a lot of love from people, but I think it's definitely worth giving it a shot. If you haven't seen it before and you want something new to watch, give it a shot, because it is really, really fucking good. I think we're going to wrap up there for tonight, because we have been going on a really long time. So, briefly, Knock Knock, okay. Minions, okay. Attack the Block, good. There we go. So that's all from us tonight. I'd like to thank Chris Byrne and Chris Haig for joining me, and give them a chance to tell you where you can follow them and what their little pet projects are. Chris Byrne, you go first. Where can people follow you on the Twitters?
On the Twitters, you can follow me at CinemaTronics, and that's Tronics with an X in the end. And you can also find my website, cinematronics.com, where you can find my podcast. That's right, I do have my own podcast. Eventually, I've just recorded one on Jurassic World and Inside Out, so you'll be able to find them very shortly, if not now, hopefully. But yes, subscribe.
Okay, you can tweet and twat me and do whatever at @Hire_Boy. I co-host a Fan Friction podcast with Tom East. It's all fandom and media and Fan Friction, all weird stuff like that. We are on hiatus until August, because we've had possibly the most intense kind of 3-4 months since we actually finished recording on a regular basis. So we're going to wait until August and do that. I believe we're going to be starting sharing a space with Word of Nerd, although I don't know when that's going to happen. You'll have to talk to Pete Gaskell about it. But yes, feel free to send me your tweets and twats and twats and all that sort of thing.
You can also follow Black Hole Cinema on the Twitters at Black Hole Cinema. We're also on the Facebooks. I believe our Overlord Tony will be doing a Terminator special next week.
I think I'm the only person looking forward to that film, but anyway.
Emma Platt, can send me abuse at Crush82 if you want. I don't do anything else besides the Dead Meat section. I was going to set up my own Twitter for it, but I thought, no, that sounds like too much hard work. Next time on Dead Meat, if Tony lets me back on, we are going to be talking about Final Girl. Going to be very, very scary heavy, so I do apologise in advance, but hopefully it will be enjoyable. So that's all from this evening. And before we sign off, I'd just like to remind you to stop trying to make fetch happen. Okay? Okay. Bye!
Bye.
Knock, knock, shit, minions, crap, dead meat, aliens, rah, bye.